Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 234, featuring Sonia Kristoff from Massive Entertainment, which is part of Ubisoft. And they were fantastic to bring her and be platinum sponsors of Total Chaos back in May. Melissa, you remember that, right?
I do, yeah. She had a very popular talk. I hung out with her a bit afterwards and there were people coming up saying what an amazing job she did and how inspirational she was. So it was a big hit.
I feel bad that I missed a talk because I was moderating. I couldn't actually go to her talk. I was moderating another talk. But I did get a chance to sit out with her for the podcast. She's a very interesting person. She was actually an assistant director on set for a long time. And then from there, she left, you know, working on that part of the movie industry, decided to become a matte painter. And then she did matte painting for a long time, some 3D generalist stuff over at ILM, and then became a did some interactive work, and then eventually became a level designer in games. It was really, really interesting stuff. I was really happy to have her on. Really great podcast with her, so really cool. And it was really cool that Ubisoft was able to be part of Total Chaos as well. So
one thing I could mention now,
yeah,
is that our Total Chaos recap page is
due
out, fingers crossed, next week.
Wow.
I'm gonna put it out there in the hope that it comes true.
It took a while. There was so much going on that it's taking a long time to compile all
this
stuff.
Yeah, we had some issues getting all the videos in place, but I know for a fact Sonia's is on the recap page
because
I put it together.
Yeah, so good. I can finally see her talk.
We can put a link for that in the podcast page.
That sounds great.
We will hopefully. If it's not there when you're listening to this, it will be soon.
It will be out soon for sure. That's great. But speaking of events, we're now on to the next big event, which is going to be like in a week and a half or so from now.
Yeah.
Which is SIGGRAPH. Are you ready for SIGGRAPH?
I am. I went to print out some notes from our event page.
Right.
We're, the exciting thing is, I should explain, is that because Total Chaos was such a hit in Sofia,
mm-hmm.
In the past, we've actually concentrated on putting together V-Ray days at SIGGRAPH.
Right.
But now we want to bring that Total Chaos vibe
right.
to SIGGRAPH. And, you know, it's not just V-Ray. We're going to have Corona Talks there.
Yep.
It's not just visual effects. There's a whole lot of different industries represented in our talk lineup.
Yeah.
So it made complete sense for us to bring Total Chaos to SIGGRAPH.
Right. I think it's a great way to sort of, you know, continue that brand and thinking about what Total Chaos means and keep going with,
yeah,
this theme.
Bringing it to the other side of the world.
So for people that need to know, we're doing a whole series of talks for 2 days. What are the days, Melissa?
Yes, so it's going to be the 30th and the 31st of July.
Yeah.
We have a meeting room booked, one of the large meeting rooms on the second floor of the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Which is room 409A.
That's correct. And we have 5 talks each day lined
right.
up, which are pretty epic. We've got Vlado's Renderland talk that he gives every year, which is typically our most popular one. That's
yep.
like standing room only for mm-hmm. that one. But then if you go to our event page, which is chaosgroup.com/SIGGRAPH2019,
yep.
you can see the whole list of other talks. And I was just going to say, I went to print out my notes and it was 33 pages long.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was some bad formatting from the webpage to the printer. But anyway,
yeah, there's a lot of
information on
there. Yeah, and I think it's not just the Total Chaos stuff that we've got on there, but also other talks that a lot of people from Chaos Group are going to be giving around.
Yeah, yeah. So just quickly with the Total Chaos talk. So I mentioned Vlado.
Yep.
We've got Cobus from KPF going to be there. Mm-hmm. Deke's coming back to give us an updated reprise of his talk that he gave us in Sofia.
Yeah.
Creating superheroes the V-Ray way. So we've got lots of gorgeous yep. Avengers images of Thanos on that one.
Right. And that's Deke from DD.
Yes. And we've got some Corona talks, like I said. We've got Method coming back. Oh, a really exciting one is we have Elastic. We've got Kirk coming over, who's just been nominated for an Emmy, I believe.
Yeah, that just came out this week.
Yes,
that's awesome.
For the Game of Thrones title sequence.
Yep.
So this is really interesting because they've been working on the show since the very beginning, so there's like 10 years worth of development on the title sequences.
Right.
And they've used Ray from the very beginning, so that's going to be a really cool one to come
very
and see.
Very exciting, yeah.
And then we also have a wonderful group of women who work in the field of VFX and animation, and they'll be giving a panel which is about carving your niche in the industry. Mm-hmm. So again, this is a different vibe from the normal V-Ray days. We've got a panel discussion, so that's really good if you want to come along to that. And then we close out the last day with Pixamondo.
Right.
Yeah, so they're talking about the epic battle in the Orville
right.
TV series. So
that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
We should note that in order to go to these talks, you will need at least an exhibit-only pass.
Yes.
At the minimum. And if you would like to get one of those, we are offering a promo code for people to go out. So just go to our chaosgroup.com/SIGGRAPH2019 for more details. But you can also just use the promo code TOTALCHAOS2019.
It's just 19.
Oh, is it just 19?
Yeah.
TOTALCHAOS19.
That's correct.
TOTALCHAOS19 for the promo code to get a free exhibit-only pass to SIGGRAPH. So if you're in LA and say, boy, I'd really like to stop by and see some talks and go to the exhibits and stuff.
It's free.
It's free. So go ahead and do that and save yourself some money.
Yeah. And cool. Then you did mention, just briefly, we're going to be around the conference in other places, not
yes.
just at our
Go ahead.
Talks.
Since you have it all printed out.
I do. It's really small print, though, and it's quite dark in this room. But we're doing a bunch of presentations on the NVIDIA booth.
Yes.
They've got two booths, actually, next
yeah,
to each
Yeah, actually,
other.
If you want to see Huge. Some of the really coolest technology we have, cutting-edge stuff, that's actually going to be at the NVIDIA booth. So go to NVIDIA booth and check it out. And there's a hint why it's at the NVIDIA booth. GPU.
And we'll be showcasing Lavina there. Yeah. And I've just had a little sneak peek at the new demos, actually. So that's looking really mind-blowing.
I'm working hard on getting that going. It's very exciting, and it's just going to get better. Hopefully, we'll get something even more amazing in another week, because it's developing fast right now.
And then we've got another couple of things. There's a course and a technical paper, our Corona research team are presenting.
Mm-hmm.
But all details, there's a lot to take in, I know.
Right.
All details are on our event page, and there's links to the various things if you want more details from that. So a lot going on. We've got some fantastic speakers. We're going to be there.
Yep.
There's actually going to be about 30 Chaos Group people.
Yeah,
they're
showing up. Yeah, in fact, it's so busy. I was planning on just having a more leisurely, casual hanging out and going to some talks at SIGGRAPH, but no, can't happen. In fact, there's been so many podcast requests that I ended up getting a special space near the convention center just to record podcasts.
Brilliant.
It's the only way I can pull it off.
Got to keep you busy.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks so much, Melissa, and hopefully we'll see you at SIGGRAPH. With that, please enjoy this amazing podcast with Sonia Kristoff from Massive Entertainment.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
One of the things that a lot of people like on the podcast is to listen to origin stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's start with that. You mentioned that you listened to the one with Eric Miller and that he was your texture teacher.
He was, yes.
At Noman. So obviously you went to Noman.
I did.
Okay.
I did.
When was that?
That was in 2010, actually.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, so I actually started off, this was actually a career change for me. So
okay.
I started off as an assistant director in Hollywood.
Ah.
So I used to work on set.
Uh-huh.
And it was in 2008, I think, it was when there was a writer's strike.
Right.
And
oh, yeah, I remember that strike.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody was working. There was a lot of free time on our hands.
Right.
And it was during that time that I saw a presentation about the VFX on 2012.
Oh, right.
Yes. And that was the first time I'd seen anything like it before.
Okay.
It was super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, all right.
Was it the, let me guess, was it the one where the car garage was crumbling and stuff?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That one. And the earthquake one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one. So I was like, okay, well, I have nothing better to do at the moment anyways. I'm not working.
Right.
So I asked around and talked to a couple of VFX supervisors I knew. Mm-hmm. And they recommended to take a couple classes at Noman.
Okay.
So I
good school.
Yeah. So I went to one of their open houses and signed up for a couple classes.
Wow.
And that's how it started.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were obviously interested in film before.
Yes, I went to film school.
You went to film school. Okay.
Yes, yes, that's way back. Yes.
USC or?
No, Miami actually.
Miami.
University of Miami.
All right.
Yeah, we won the national championship when I was there.
Ah, interesting. Mm-hmm. You know who also had on the podcast who went to University of Miami and did a short there is Wes Ball.
I don't think I know.
Wes Ball is the guy who directed all the Maze Runner stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, and he was into CG too.
Yeah.
Over there. It was interesting. Yeah. So there are some really great film schools coming out of Miami or out of Florida that I don't think many people know about. It's not as well known as the USC's and the UCLA's and all that stuff.
It's not. But it was really like when I was there, we were still like out in the shack somewhere.
Yeah.
Right as I left, that's when we got the nice new building, of course.
Of course.
Right as I left.
Right.
So it was growing. It was growing. I've been back since then only once.
Okay.
And I could definitely see the improvements. It was really nice.
Nice.
Nice new building. New equipment. And when I was there, we still had a Bolex.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Flatbed. We still had a flatbed editing bay.
Right.
I got to actually splice film.
Oh, did you edit by slicing film?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that's called linear editing.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. Really tough work. Hard. I can't believe they were able to make those editing decisions because you had to be really sure about what you were doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally cutting film and then using tape and taping it together.
Yeah.
And hopefully you don't have too fatty fingers because then the tape will damage the film. And then you're screwed.
Yeah. Well, interesting. So you obviously had a passion for film, but how long were you working in Hollywood then before you decided I'm going to try something different?
It was about 7 to 10 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
Around that range. Yeah, it was a long time.
Wow.
Long time. I worked my way up all the way from production assistant to Directors Guild trainee to assistant director.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having been on set myself, I know that the ADs are the people I need to make the friends with right away as a visual effects person.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yes.
Immediately, because otherwise, if you're not friends with them, you're never going to get what you need.
Yeah. No, because we run the set.
You hold the clock.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, really cool. Okay, so now we fast forward. He's like, I'm going to take some stuff at Noman. And how long were you doing classes at Noman for?
I just signed up for a couple of classes in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized I was having just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I was painting and drawing again, which I did back then in college, but I hadn't done that since.
Right.
And, you know, the strike also had given me a lot of time to think about my life, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I looked back on it and I realized that for the majority of the time, I just worked.
Right.
That was my life.
Right.
I thought it was time for a change.
Okay.
So that's when, I took the classes. I worked on putting a portfolio together.
Yep.
And I enrolled in Noman's 2-year full-time program.
Okay.
So that's what I did.
2 years, and then when you do it in 2 years, that's a lot of classes.
Yes, it's full time.
Yeah,
I think it was 6 classes a term. I think
that. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. 6 classes. Yeah.
That was a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
Yeah. That was a lot.
Wow. Okay. And so, what became some of the passion that you started to get into once you started going to Noman?
Matte painting.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the holy grail.
Yeah.
One of the hardest things to do when you haven't painted in 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I like a good challenge.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's I just loved the efficiency of it.
Uh-huh.
It had a bit of that old movie magic for me.
Yep.
And I was missing that.
Okay.
Because on set, you know, when I first started, we still built practical sets.
Right.
On Timeline was my first feature that I worked on.
Right.
We still built a full-scale castle, which is incredible. Right.
Uh-huh.
We had hundreds of background actors. We actually filmed everything.
Yep.
Towards the end, it was all green screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more boring to shoot than a green screen.
Right. Yep.
So matte painting for me embodied that old movie magic.
Okay. Because you get to think of what's behind the camera. Right.
Yes. You actually get to create
right
that magical moment.
Yep.
So that's why I was really intrigued by it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Noman didn't offer a matte painting track.
Okay.
So I did the journalist track instead.
Okay.
And I sort of talk about this in my presentation tomorrow as well. Mm-hmm. But I made it a personal goal of mine to incorporate as many matte paintings as I could into homework assignments.
Right.
So my teachers weren't all that fond of that all the time. But
right.
I needed to get in practice.
Right, right, right.
And I wanted to, you know, learn as much as I could.
Okay. So that's cool. Okay, so now you've got a generalist track going on, but you're still interested in matte painting.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that probably means that a lot of your focus was environment work.
Yes. Right? Oh yeah, my characters are terrible.
Right.
I don't do characters. No.
Right, right. So environment work was a big part of what you did, right?
Yes.
So what were some of the ways you were doing environment work at that time?
Everything, right? Everything from 2D painting to sketching, traditional sketching.
Right.
Photoshop work, obviously.
Right.
And then also, but also 3D.
Right.
So pretty much anything I could get my hands on,
right.
I was doing. I took even environment design classes outside of Noman.
Mm-hmm.
I participated in online map painting competitions.
Yep.
And I even reached out to Dylan Cole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who I actually knew through a mutual friend of mine from working in film.
Yep.
And asked him for some feedback.
He's a big Noman guy, too.
He teaches
there, yeah.
Yeah, he does a couple of Noman workshop DVDs, yep. Yeah. So he gave me some feedback, and that was, you know, really, really great and helpful.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, pretty much whatever I could do.
Well, I think it's interesting. A lot of people don't necessarily know that, especially now, matte painting is actually a lot done in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And because people actually use matte paintings and generate parallax out of it,
mm-hmm.
you can't. It's not just the background anymore, right?
Mm-mm.
So you develop a lot of stuff, and you can do stuff in 3D real rough and then just paint on top of it and project and all these different things. So
yes.
It's really cool technique that people use. And I think that's really great. I remember when I was on Tron, I worked with a matte painter where he was like, I need this, but can you give me like a specular pass to go on this, and mm-hmm. we'll comp it on top? And it just all of a sudden is like, I can't believe this is actually a matte painting, but it's actually just working really well. So I think it's a fascinating field to think about it, because you can basically create an entire world out of a frame, and it's
yes.
pretty amazing.
Yes, and yeah. and that's the whole spectrum of matte painting as well, right?
Right.
Because some companies still use the traditional 2D matte paintings.
Yep.
I call it traditional now. I mean, it's not obviously
still
traditional.
Photoshop.
It's still
right.
Photoshop.
Right.
But you can still do that. But then it transitions into some painting projected on maybe cards, and
yes.
then it grows into projecting it onto full scale 3D models.
Right.
Oh, and on the far right of the spectrum is, you know, just having a complete 3D model textured and everything.
Right.
And you just paint some small patches on top of it
yep.
to fix a couple of things.
Yep.
So it's nowadays it's, you have to be a generalist nowadays, really.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think, and I also think it's interesting that the world in the CG has actually started to embrace generalists again, because everything became so segregated that it was like, you are a lighter and that's all you do. And you're a modeler. Oh no, what kind of modeler are you?
Uh-huh.
Are you a hard body modeler, a soft body modeler, or a character modeler? And it's like, you know, and that now it's like, nope, there's generalists. Or again, I think ILM basically embraced a generalist in a big way, right?
Well, yeah, that's where I went.
That's, there you go, right?
Yes, very much so.
Right.
They were actually so much so that they have a completely separate pipeline from the traditional pipeline.
Yes. Yes, I know that. Who do they have on? Swedish guy. He's been on the podcast before. Johan?
Johan? No, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I didn't work with him directly, but he was, he was one of the leads while I was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So did you go from Noman to ILM at that point, or do you have a couple of things between there? A
couple of things between.
Okay.
I went to Rhythm and Hughes first.
Oh, when? Right.
You know, yes.
Yeah. Well, it was like, wait, when did you work? Uh-huh. So did you work on Life of Pi?
I did not, but I was there.
Okay.
No, I worked on Into the Storm.
Into the Storm. Okay. Is Johnny Gibson on that one?
I don't know Johnny Gibson.
Okay.
Vanessa Chung was my...
Vanessa Chung, your soup?
Or, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm art director, actually.
Right. Yeah, I know some guys who stayed to the bitter end.
Yeah.
Jason Iverson... Yeah, interesting place. So you went to Rhythm as a generalist?
As a matte painter.
As a matte painter. Yes. Okay, great.
Yes, yeah. I was a full-on matte painter.
Nice.
That's what I wanted to do. I was so excited. I actually managed to get that.
How long were you able to stay there?
4 months when it happened.
Wow, no.
Yeah, and obviously when it happened, I mean the bankruptcy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Rhythm and Hues was unfortunately a really, really important studio in the visual effects world that was highly affected by the changing climate of the economy of the visual effects world. Mm-hmm. So it's gone bankrupt, unfortunately. But okay, so you get at least to have 4 months out of it.
I did.
And so what happened after Rhythm?
I went to the Mill.
Oh, the Mill. Okay.
Yes.
So in LA.
In LA.
Okay.
So I worked on a couple of commercials.
Yeah.
And
did you know Chris Knight?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay, he's a supervisor there. So you worked on some commercials.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was great because it was faster turnarounds,
mm-hmm.
and they used 3D a lot more than I was used
right.
to before.
Yeah.
And I got to do some 3D too, so that was good.
So you already had those skills.
I did.
Okay.
But I hadn't used them in a professional setting before.
Right.
So this was the first time.
Okay.
So that was good.
Nice.
And I did a couple commercials there. I also did some projection work in Nuke, which was good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I started to branch out a little bit.
Nice.
And then I went to Stargate Studios.
Okay. Where is Stargate?
Pasadena.
Yes, Pasadena. LA. What were they working on? Oh, they were doing a bunch of TV stuff.
Yes.
Yes.
They did like The Walking Dead.
The Walking
for a
Dead.
While.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I went there because I had gone there. I did my internship there while I was at Noman.
Oh, okay.
So I went back there for just a few weeks.
Right.
And then I got a phone call.
Okay.
From ILM.
How did they find you?
My placement manager at Noman, Shannon Wiggins.
Shannon.
Yes. Shannon.
All right. So she recommended you.
She did.
Okay.
She did. And they called me and asked me if I wanted to join their generalist apprenticeship program.
Right.
So that's how
in
it
the Bay
started.
Area?
In San Francisco.
Right.
Yes. So I said yes. I mean,
sure.
Right. I mean, it's ILM calling.
Right.
And packed up my bags and went up there.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And then my car broke down on the way there.
Yeah.
Middle of nowhere.
Yep. On the 5?
Yep. I had like 1 bar left on my phone.
Oh,
so
no.
It was like right before it was like the dead zone where you have no cell phone reception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just before Cattlemont Ranch or mm-hmm. right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right in that area.
Yeah, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a flat road of nothing.
There's nothing there.
Right.
I had cows. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of cows there. okay, so, but you did manage to get there.
I managed to get there
okay.
just on time.
Now, what was the first feature you worked on over there?
The first feature after the apprenticeship?
Yeah.
How long
was the apprenticship?
That's a good question. How long was it? It was 5-6 weeks, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think something like
so
that.
So it's more like a training, like a long training.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but it sort of wasn't. It wasn't.
They kind of gave you some shots to work on?
Exactly. They
Got
gave
it.
Us a 5-shot sequence to work on.
Okay.
And it was 5 of us.
Right.
So each of one of us sort of took over a shot. We right. all did different things on it.
But you could at least learn from each other and stuff like that.
We could, yes.
Right.
We could. And we also had people around us that we could ask
Were
questions.
Were you using Max?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you hadn't learned Max.
No,
right.
No. Open it once and close it real quick.
Right.
So
that's another thing that's interesting about the ILM team. I mean, they call it the generalist team. They used to call it the
Digimat
team, mm-hmm. and now they call it the generalist team because they actually do much more than just matte painting.
It's full 3D environments.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's even more than that.
Sometimes there's characters, sometimes
yes.
there's animation, camera
yes.
work, everything.
Oh, yeah. I animated.
Yeah.
Several things.
Right.
And I'm not an animator.
Okay. So what of the 5, do you remember the shot that you worked on in your apprenticeship?
Well, yeah, because it was actually several. Yeah, we, apprenticeships,
right.
things happen. And
right.
they also test you to see how you react in certain situations.
Sure.
So some of us got pulled early. So we had to fill in when they left.
Right.
I worked on a couple of the shots.
Okay. All right. So what was your first feature after the apprenticeship?
Tomorrowland. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
That was awesome. It was great.
I think Art Cyan worked on Tomorrowland.
Yes, I know Art. He sat across from me.
Yeah. So I actually recommended Art to that team.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Art literally sat across from me.
I work with him at DD I was the first feature he worked on. I think it was Tron.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I work. He's a great guy.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember specifically what did it was, there was a big shot that we worked on Oblivion together where he had to kind of build everything himself and make it work. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said, I'm going to trust you to do this. I'm going to leave you alone, mm-hmm. but I trust you to do this by yourself. With, you know, you figure out what you need for help and I'll get you to help, but it's like, all right. And it was this huge long shot where the drone was going up and down and you basically had to get all the stuff figured out. How am I going to get this rendered? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? What help do I need for modeling? What help do I need for textures? What can I do? And he did that. And then Johan was saying, I'm looking for some guys. Like, I got a guy for you.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so good. Yeah, so good. Yeah. And such a good eye.
Yeah, he's got a really good eye.
Yeah, he definitely.
He doesn't have enough self-confidence sometimes, but he has a good eye.
I think a lot of artists have that. I feel I have that problem too. So I think a lot of artists have that.
That's a good thing to have because it makes your work better in the end.
Yeah, you know, whenever you do something, you always feel like it's not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I need to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So Tomorrowland was a great show.
Yes, it was awesome.
And there were some amazing environment shots mm-hmm. and that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously now you're doing it in Max and you're doing it in you're rendering in V-Ray, I think, at the time, right?
Yes.
So really great, great show. Did you stay for a couple features there or did you?
Yeah, I did. A couple. I also did, what did I do after that? I think the Iron Man ride Disneyland Hong Kong, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That one next. And then I jumped onto Agent Carter.
Oh, right.
Yeah, okay. That was a great show.
Uh-huh.
And then I did Doctor Strange.
Oh, that's a beautiful show.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a good one to work on.
Uh-huh.
And then I also hopped over to ILMX Lab.
Oh, up in Vancouver?
No.
There is one.
They're in San Francisco.
They're in San Francisco.
Yes, in San Francisco.
Who's the guy who ran ILMX Lab in San Francisco? Had a German name, I think.
I worked with Tim Alexander. He was my VFX soup.
Okay.
So I worked.
So what were you doing at X Lab?
Environment artist.
For which projects?
Carne y Arena.
Oh, okay.
Terrible. Again, sorry for the accent. I'm butchering it horribly. But yes, it was a VR experience.
Right.
We called it.
Uh-huh.
And it was directed by Alejandro Iñárritu.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shown as a museum exhibit around the world.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was about illegal immigrants crossing the Mexican border.
Right. Yeah.
Passion project for pretty much everybody involved, you know,
right.
Not just the filmmakers.
Yeah.
Because we were actually telling real people's story.
Right.
And we wanted to do them justice as much as we could.
Right.
We used Unreal.
Uh-huh.
And it was also an incredibly technical challenge.
Right.
Because
it was full 6 degrees of freedom VR.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
With a photoreal environment.
Right.
10 fully animated characters.
Right.
Yes.
That's pretty intense.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of technical limitations and things to figure out and work with.
Right.
And I had, at that point, taken one Unreal class.
Right.
So it was very much a sink or swim. Here you go. Good luck.
Right.
But it was a great experience.
Yeah. So I guess this was probably your first foray into game engines, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. That's where the transition started to happen.
Well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're getting there.
Yeah.
So this is your first transition into game engines, and this is what you basically started looking at. So now all of a sudden, where you could have unlimited polygons, ridiculous size textures, all of that, now all of a sudden it's like you have a budget.
I do.
Right.
A tight budget.
a tight budget because you have to render it. It's VR, so it's got to be 90 frames a second. Right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means that's changed a lot of what you're doing. How did it affect you? I mean, what were some of the lessons you learned from that process?
We changed the complete pipeline, right? I couldn't work how I was used to working before.
Sure.
I had to think about texture space. I had to think about rendering the polygons versus can I just, you know, I did use some mapping techniques for a part of it.
Yeah?
Yeah, because we had a big mountain in the background and, we modeled it first and we tried to get it to look the way we wanted it to mm-hmm. in full 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized it was very expensive.
Yeah.
Then I was like, well, I'll just paint it on a card.
Right.
And it worked.
Right.
So I got to use a little bit of that film magic still.
Nice.
So that was exciting.
Yeah, I guess if it's far enough, You don't need to be 3D.
No.
Right.
I did some very basic geometry and then just...
Yeah, it's just enough to get maybe a slight parallax.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the background.
So that was nice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, it was also working with the guys at XLab and, you know, learning more about different shader techniques and different things we can do to optimize.
Right.
So it was a lot of that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So now you're bringing some of your film knowledge and your film things into a game engine and trying to apply that and seeing some of the limitations you had and figuring out solutions. I think that's another thing you get from being a generalist is that you're constantly trying to figure out solutions to something, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're an expert, sometimes like it doesn't work, just kick it downhill. Someone else will fix it for you, right? You don't. There's no downhill for you.
No, it's usually us fixing it.
Yeah, it's you're the only one fixing it.
Yes.
I think that's what makes it really interesting, for sure.
Yeah, and that's why we're always looking for new techniques or new software. You know, if I need to do something, I'm like, well, what's the fastest way to get there?
Right.
So we're always looking to learn new things.
Okay. All right, that's awesome. So how long were you at XLab for?
It was just for that project, and then I started another one, but I didn't get to finish it because I was needed back at ILM.
Okay.
I was only on loan.
Oh, okay.
So they needed me back. So I think it wasn't that long. It was just a couple of months.
Okay.
It was a relatively short project, I think maybe 3 to 4 months.
But at that point, he's like, well, I've just learned a new skill, right? It's about right.
I know, I was having fun with it.
Right.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's something completely different. Uh-huh. And a completely different way of thinking, you know.
Sure.
And I like the efficiency of building an environment in a modular fashion.
Okay.
That was exciting to me.
Right.
So, yeah, I was very intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go, and then I went back to traditional, you know, VFX work.
Right. But did you bring anything that you learned from that experience in the gaming world to visual effects, or you didn't feel like you needed to do that?
I couldn't.
Oh, you couldn't. There just wasn't enough. There wasn't anything that would work there.
There wasn't enough time.
Oh, right.
Because a lot of the things you can do in games, for example, that you can't do in film, is because in games you have more time.
Right.
In film, we don't.
Right.
It's a much accelerated pace. And also, shots change a lot more mm-hmm. than they do in games.
Sure.
Generally, in games, you know, if it's a first person or a third person camera,
right.
You know, you generally know that. You're locked into that.
Right, right, right.
In VFX, the camera can start all the way out in the cosmos and then punch right into, you know, the nose. It
right.
can do all kinds of things.
And they do that a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you just have to be a lot more flexible.
Okay.
And a lot of those shortcuts just require, or a lot of the game pipelines require planning.
Right. Got it.
So unfortunately, no.
Got it. Okay. So what were you working on and once you went back to matte painting? Or did a generalist group?
Yeah, I went back. I did. I worked on another ride.
Okay.
And then I started to work on the Millennium Falcon ride.
Oh.
And yeah, that was back in Unreal.
That was in Unreal.
That was back in Unreal.
Oh. Wait, yeah. The one that's over at Disneyland.
Star Wars Land.
Yeah.
Has not opened yet.
Oh, on Star Wars Land.
Oh yeah.
Okay, because there was okay. Because I did, I went to Disneyland not long ago, so I was at there was a Star Tours at Disneyland, so
no,
not that one.
No, I'm talking about the Millennium Falcon.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Star Tours, you are in a Millennium. It's part of the Millennium Falcon, but I don't think it's the same thing.
No, I don't think it's the same thing.
Okay,
no, this has not opened yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, it's opening like in a week or something.
Oh yeah, soon.
It's a, yeah. Okay, so we will make sure to not to we'll put this out, you know, in June. Because I know it's opening in May. All I know is that I'm not going to be able to go to Disneyland for at least a year because the crowds are going to be insane.
I know. We already said we have to wait probably at least 3 to 5 years
yeah.
before it's doable.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
All right. So that sounds very exciting. Very exciting. A lot of people are going to be excited to see your work up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and you said it was real time. So why was it using real time rendering?
I don't think I can talk about that actually, unfortunately.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm sorry, this hasn't opened yet, so
yeah.
This is actually, I think,
all right.
Where,
all
yeah.
All right, okay. All right, well, I'll talk to Mike Romy. He works for Imagineering.
Yes, they can tell you all everything about it, I'm sure, and they'll be happy to tell you everything.
That's okay.
Because they're really the geniuses behind the whole thing anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, they are. Yeah, that's cool. All right, so very exciting. Something to look forward to when we go to Disneyland is seeing that ride and seeing what it's going to do. So, okay, and then where did you go from there?
Well, then personal reasons.
Yeah.
So my mom, mm-hmm. She decided she wanted to move back to Germany.
Ah, right.
And
which is where you're from originally.
Exactly.
Right.
And so she had been diagnosed with cancer the year before that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, she was in remission, thankfully.
Yeah.
But the doctors sort of said, you know, it would only be a matter of time before
right.
it comes back. So basically, you know, the rest of the family's all in Germany. So uh-huh. I was like, all right, you know, go there.
Right.
And I'll see if I can find a job in Europe to be close.
Okay.
So we started looking into jobs. Mm-hmm. And Brexit was already approaching.
Right.
So I kind of didn't want to go to the UK.
Right.
So I was looking at other options. And again, I had a lot of fun working in Unreal. Mm-hmm. And I was really curious what it would be like to work in a AAA game studio.
Right.
So I started looking around. At this point, I didn't have any professional work that mm-hmm. I could show.
Right.
I had taken an Unreal class. Mm-hmm. So I had one finished exterior environment.
Okay.
And a half-finished interior.
Right.
That's all I had.
Right.
But I said, you know, what the heck? Let's
yeah.
just try it to apply anyways. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens. I got some rejections, of course. Mm-hmm. But I also got some responses.
Okay.
And then I saw that Massive Entertainment was looking for environment artists.
Oh, right.
And, you know, Massive is, you know, the studio behind The Division. Mm-hmm. And I had played The Division. Mm-hmm. And it's an absolutely stunning game.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance to play it at all?
I haven't had a chance to play it, but I've seen it. Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
I love the story, too.
Yeah, and there's so many details in the world. And, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. Like, every time I still see it now, I'm like, how can you get that much detail into a game engine?
Right.
It's incredible. So I started to ask around a couple of my friends. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, hey, have you, you know, Massive's looking for people. Have you, you know, do you know what it's like to work there? Mm-hmm. And two of my XLab coworkers, they did have connections. And they told me they had heard nothing but great things about it.
Okay.
So they're like, but, you know, if you want to, we can put you in touch with the guys over there.
Awesome.
So they did.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, I had a job interview.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And where were they based?
Sweden.
And Sweden.
Malmö, right. Sweden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my job interview was at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was going to be a video chat.
Right.
Which I didn't realize. So I was literally in my pajamas for the interview.
I'm sure they understand.
It was a great way to break the ice.
Okay. Yeah.
Sandra, our recruiter, is amazing. So
yeah.
we had a good laugh about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everything went well, and I got an offer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
Super excited.
Okay. And you were going to be an environment artist there.
Yeah. Well, technically, my title is level artist.
But level artist.
Yes, but a lot of people don't quite know what that means.
That makes sense,
means.
Though.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because you're designing the level, and the level is an environment. So.
Yes, we're building the world. Essentially,
right.
Yeah. Because we also work with level designers.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, we have very much two roles there.
Right, okay.
But yeah, we packed our bags and off we went.
Okay, there you go. And so now that you, so this is your first foray into the games, right?
Yes.
And this is where you currently are as well, right?
Yes.
Now, Massive is part of Ubisoft?
Yes.
Okay. So. Mm-hmm. All right, Ubisoft is who brought you here, which is great. Thank you so much, Ubisoft, for being a sponsor and bringing great people to this thing. So I'm really, it's awesome that you're here and can share that knowledge, because I really would love people to know what it's like to be working on a level in a game and how different that is from the visual effects world and all those other things you're doing.
It's very much, it's so much more teamwork.
Okay.
Than ever before.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, you were a generalist. So you kind of had to figure out everything on your own, right?
Pretty much. You're... Sort of like I was in my own little bubble.
Right.
You know, working in games, it's a very much a team effort.
Okay.
You know, you work together with the level designers. You mm-hmm. work together. You work with the directors. You work mm-hmm. with the content team. You work with effects. You work with lighting.
Right.
There's so many teams that you interact with.
Right.
You know, it's great.
Right. But you also have to design it for... everything
for 360.
360.
Yes.
Right. So mm-hmm. that's where your VR experience sort of gave you a heads up about that kind of experience, right?
Yes.
You're not just doing a painting for this, like for what's in front of you. You're doing it for anywhere anyone may want to look or walk to or get down or do anything, right?
Yes. But also, actually, I think what people often underestimate is you can actually use your film knowledge for that, because
yeah.
film is very composition heavy.
Yes.
And focused.
Yes.
And games, you can do something similar.
Okay.
You can, through your propping, direct the player into certain positions to give them the ultimate composition.
Right.
And to really give the player that wow moment.
Right.
So in a way, I have felt that I can use my compositional skills to help me in the game
uh-huh.
as well.
Nice.
That's been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, and that's actually something that I talked with the level designers when we worked together. you know, we talk about, okay, well, which are the paths? Where does the player come from?
Right.
And how can we make this a really interesting and just a wow moment?
Right.
Yeah.
And that doesn't just come from visual effects. That comes back from film school, right?
So, yeah, it does.
Right?
It does.
So that's a really interesting skill to bring back to the video game moments.
There's a lot more crossover than people realize. It's really, yeah.
I think there's crossover in every industry, though. I mean, maybe not accounting, but but I think there's some things that, like, you can make ties to a lot of different things, right? Mm-hmm. I just did a podcast with Victor Hugo, and he said his dream job when he was growing up was to be a history teacher. And now he's like an amazing character artist, right?
That's awesome.
So you don't really know where things are going to go sometimes,
no.
Right? And I think that's, you know, getting into games is a really cool thing. But did you play games a lot or a little bit? Or
I played some.
Yeah?
But, you know, it was more of a hobby and more of a casual thing on the side.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't...
You weren't an avid gamer.
No.
Right.
No. You know, I just did it for fun.
Right.
You know, I'll hop in a game of Overwatch every once in a while.
Okay.
You know, Mercy was my girl.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So what was it like? I was thinking, you know, what did you suddenly go like, oh, this is how the sausage is made, you know, like, you know, in terms of figuring out how to make a game, because you're experiencing a game, I always feel that when you're playing a video game, you feel like you have control of the situation, but obviously certain things guide you in certain ways, like uh-huh. you said, but how do you do that? How do you, like, oh, this is how that works. Like, you must be certain things that do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of discussions. It's a lot of meetings and everybody, you know, getting the gameplay directors involved.
And there's tricks to it, too.
And there's tricks to it. And,
right.
you know, sometimes it's visual. Sometimes it's more gameplay related. So, you know,
right.
a lot of, there's some scripting involved and uh-huh. things we can do. Pacing, obviously, as well. So
right.
it's really a collection of multiple people coming together.
Right.
And that's what I love about it. Because it's, you know, you put a bunch of people in a room and everybody's mm-hmm. like, how can we make this amazing?
Right.
And everybody just throws out ideas and, you know, some stick and some are maybe not quite so good. So we'll put those aside.
Right.
Some we can't do out of different other restrictions.
Right.
And then we have to maybe wait to do them later.
Right.
But it's really a collection of multiple people coming together.
Right.
And just coming up with different things because it can be multiple things.
Right.
It could even be audio.
Yes,
it could
audio
be different things.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's that, and that's what I love about it. It's so many people and so many creative minds coming together.
Right. I remember seeing a presentation, I think it might have been at SIGGRAPH. It was someone designing a level on game. And the way, because, you know, in games, most of the time you're supposed to follow a path, but you don't really necessarily know where the path is.
Mm-hmm.
So you're supposed to get hints about how to get there or what you're doing. But this level, what they did is they used, it was very subtle, like yellow in uh-huh. areas. So they used like the door is yellow or there's a little bit of yellow paint here or whatever. And subconsciously the player is like, I'm going to go over there.
Uh-huh.
Like it was like this very psychological thing. So designing an environment that sort of like, you know, psychologically guides you. You may not even be conscious that you're going after yellow things the whole time,
mm-hmm.
but it sort of becomes a thing.
Well, Horizon Zero Dawn uses yellow for their jump hints.
Oh, right.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to play mm-hmm. The Division 2.
No.
Well, you're missing out.
Okay.
You should definitely do that.
Okay.
Highly recommended. And but we do something similar.
Okay.
Yes, we use yellow in certain areas as well.
Right.
But it can even be something more subtle than that. You know, for example, it could be maybe one house facade has a bright red and the others next to it are more muted.
Right.
So all of a sudden it draws your attention.
Right.
And you're like, oh, maybe there's something there.
Right.
So it could be something subtle as even just like a little bit of a value saturation shift.
Right.
That can draw the eye.
The problem I have is when I'm playing games, I usually just go into every single house, every trash can, open every single thing just to make sure I didn't miss a single thing.
So well, that's good.
It takes me forever to finish a game.
It'll take you about 200 hours to finish our game if you play it.
Okay.
There's a lot for you to find.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think it's great. I mean, I was playing Skyrim. Like, I think I've done like 500 hours on Skyrim. But
yeah.
That's because it's an open world sandbox game.
Yep.
So I'm basically like, I'm going to go wherever I want. I can
yep.
go wherever I want. So I think those are kind of amazing things. I think there's amazing things between like games that are, you know, that have a straightforward linear narrative in some way. And then ones that are basically open-ended. You work on Division 2, obviously, right?
Yes.
How long did you work on that?
About a year and a half.
A year and a half.
Year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually seems short because I know people work on games for a long time nowadays.
We had, I think we had a production time of 2 years.
Okay, yeah. So, okay, so, well, around 2 years, but that's pretty short. It seems like for such an elaborate and very detailed game, 200 hours of experience inside that game, 2 years seems like pretty short to me.
Well, we have a great engine.
Oh, okay.
We have a great engine and great tools.
Okay.
It really speeds up our process by a lot.
Right. So you're able to put a lot of geometry, a lot of detail into it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we have a great...
So you have your own engine that you guys develop, yes. Your own real-time engine?
We do.
Okay.
The Snowdrop engine.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
It's amazing.
Okay.
It's Massive's in-house engine.
Uh-huh.
And it's node-based.
Okay.
So meaning, you know, we can arrange it however we want.
Uh-huh.
We can customize it however we want.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly fast and easy. It's so easy to work with.
Right.
I think I started and within like a week I was up and running.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really great.
Okay. That's really cool. So tell me a little bit about your experiences of going from, you know, obviously offline rendering to real-time renderings. Like, what are some of the things that, you know, stood out to you about some of that experience?
I work a lot more.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot less downtime.
Yeah, you don't have time to wait and get a coffee, right?
No, not really.
Right.
You know, you get latest in the morning and then you just work.
Right.
So we actually have to consciously step away from the computer to grab a coffee.
Right.
I think that was probably, funny enough, probably one of the biggest changes.
Yeah. Lighters spend a lot of time getting coffee.
Yeah.
In the visual effects world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine. So now you're basically constantly working, right? You're constantly
uh-huh.
doing things. But what about some of the other experiences? Were there something different, obviously? Were there things that are, you know, you're thinking about in terms of the way you light things or the way you do things or prep things?
Well, my role has sort of changed, right?
Sure.
Before, I was also doing some more modeling, and
uh-huh.
I was also doing the lighting myself.
Right.
Now I don't.
Okay.
I take the content or the props
right.
that our content team creates,
yeah.
and I place them in the world.
So you're assembling it.
It's
like scene assembly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I don't do the lighting, though.
You don't do the lighting?
I don't do the lighting.
Okay.
No, we have a dedicated lighting team that takes care of it.
Okay. Well, how do they do the lighting? Can you tell me a little bit about that process? If you know?
Not too much, to be honest.
Okay.
Because I don't, you know, I might place some, you know, lights, like a ceiling light, for example.
Just enough to see.
Just enough. But also, you know, if I'm propping, let's say I prop this interior of this room.
Right.
Naturally, there would be a light on the ceiling. So I just put that in there.
Okay.
But then they come in after I'm done with my pass and they'll adjust it and they'll make it look awesome.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't actually know too much about what they do.
Okay. I'm just curious about, like, you know, how that changes, because I know a lot of stuff they do, you know, video games look really great nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, and they rival a lot of stuff that you see in feature films, but there's a lot, it's still a lot of work to get there, right? Lighting is still a complicated process in that area because you have the pre-baked things, etc. Right. So
yeah, we have to bake our GI, but
right.
We do that overnight. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not necessarily like, you know, like it's really rendered. Like there's a lot of stuff that's going in there still at the same
yeah.
time. Because you still have, I mean, games, you want them to play at 60 frames a second.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much, you know, processing power that you can muster out of a $200 video card or whatever you got, right?
That's true. That's
yeah.
true.
So you have a budget that's pretty amazing. Now, I'm sure you're like you said, your game engine is amazing, but there's, you know, there's laws of physics after a while.
Yes. No, we still have to obviously consider limitations and our budget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which means that basically people that are doing things really plan ahead a lot in terms of like, how am I going to get the best looking stuff out of here? And that's a very creative decision that
mm-hmm.
I think is being made along those areas, right?
Yes. But it's also, we like to push the boundaries as much as we can.
Okay.
So a lot of times when we approach an area, we will make it look as amazing as we can. Not even necessarily thinking about the budget at this point.
Right. Just like if I had an unlimited budget, this is what I would do.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then we go in and we take a look at, okay, how expensive is this area?
Right.
And then we start, if we have to, then we start dialing it back.
Right.
But that's really how we try to push it as far as we can to get just the most amazing game out of it.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So Can you tell me a little bit, because, you know, a lot of people that listen to the podcast are in the visual effects world or in the architecture world. We have some game people that have come on as well. But can you tell me a little bit about the hierarchy or how things work in designing games? So obviously, there's an overall director who's got an idea of what the story is, right? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the person that's overseeing everything. But then you have the people that say the level designers. And so they say, okay, when this person comes to this level, I guess you can loosely call them levels now. You don't really think of them as levels when you're actually playing.
Yeah, because it's especially when it's an open world game, you can go wherever you want,
right.
Basically.
Right. So if you have the person that designs the level, and then they say, okay, this is what I want it to look like, and then they'll go to you and say, assemble this level, or they'll modeling teams will do different parts of it.
Yeah, there's it's everybody's working, pushing at the, it's basically pulling the cart at the same time, sort of.
Got it.
So it's we have different areas that we work on. Mm-hmm. Generally, our team is divided into smaller sections. Mm-hmm. And each of us takes over, let's say, a neighborhood, for example.
Okay.
Then we have our level designers that we work with.
Right.
And they, you know, and together with them, we figure out, okay, where are the combat moments, where are the combat beats. Mm-hmm. And then they do a basic block out where, for example, covers should be.
Okay.
And then once they're done with that and they've tested it and it plays well and, you know, it's fun to...
So this is just like quick massing models in some way.
Yes, it's cubes.
Cubes.
Essentially.
Right.
You know. Because obviously we're a cover shooter game, so we have certain metrics we need to abide to.
Yep.
So they do a basic layout, and then after they're done and they're happy, mm-hmm. we come in and we replace those blocks with art.
Right, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
So that's sort of how we work on our level.
Right.
On our floor, I should say.
Right. And then at that point, once you've got it looking and they're like, yep, we tested it, it looked good in the massing, now it looks good with all the real stuff in there.
Yeah.
That's all textured, and they know what the thing is. And it's like, now we can send it up to the finishing department. I guess that's lighting that makes it look really good, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. And that's separate from the people that do the character work and all the other
stuff.
Yes,
that's a completely separate. I don't even know where they... I think they're now on the second floor, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So where in Sweden is it? Is it in Stockholm?
In Malmö.
Where is that?
South. It's. Do you know where Copenhagen is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right across the bridge.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And how has it been in Sweden?
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, I bet. Especially coming from the U.S. Uh-huh. In Sweden, I now have 25 paid vacation days.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, they're very relaxed when it comes to work hours, and mm-hmm. very understanding, because if you need to take care of some bank situations. Because if you're like me, you're not used to the European bank system, so you probably break your ATM card about 5 million times.
Right.
And they're not open on Saturday, so you have to go during work hours.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah. I know. What I know from Sweden is what I read from the girl with the dragon tattoo, and so I know they like coffee and sandwiches.
Yes, fika. It's called fika.
Yes. And they have specific breaks that are by law almost, isn't it?
It's very religious.
Very religious.
I would say it's religious at this point. Yes.
Yeah,
it's usually around 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Martin Enthed, who I believe is coming to Total Chaos, he runs the visualization group over at IKEA, and we talk about that.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So we talk about the religious coffee breaks that happen at fika.
It's very important, and very strong coffee too.
Right.
That's very strong coffee. Yeah. I usually do milk with coffee because I can't handle it.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's good though. It's really good.
That's cool. So. But do they speak English? They all speak English.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
They do. Some even better than I do.
Right.
Yeah. They're amazing.
Have you learned any Swedish?
A little bit.
Yeah.
But just enough to order coffee and pizza.
Okay. How long have you been there now?
A year and a half. Almost 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. How are you dealing with the weather changes from California?
I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I lived in Florida before I lived in California. So I've had sunshine for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for some...
Some seasons?
Some seasons. Seasons are nice.
Yeah.
Seasons are great.
Yeah, seasons in Southern California are like 70 or 75.
I don't know if that's good, actually even qualifies
no,
for a season.
No, not really. Yeah. You know, seasons are like winter means I have to put shoes on.
Yeah, exactly. this is like legitimate, like a winter jacket.
Yeah.
I have like a transitional jacket.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even know what that was before I moved here. But yeah, so it's been great.
Yeah, the Swedes are really sweet people too. I think they're very, they seem very benevolent as well. So
very welcoming.
Yeah.
You know, it is a bit funny though, because they are, you know, it's very much so nobody really talks to each other when you pass each other on the street.
Ah, right.
So they're very, you know, very reserved.
Very
in
reserved.
That sense.
Right.
But once you get to know them,
yeah,
they're amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many, you know, one of the things I've got to do when I'm doing my podcast and as I travel around the world all the time, and it's the difference in cultures are amazing. You know, like you go, I can imagine going to a place like Sweden, you don't see anyone on the street. You go to a place like Portugal, it's like, yay! You know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's really cool.
And they have the queuing system.
A queuing system?
Queuing system. Queuing system is big.
Okay.
So I didn't know that when I got there.
All right.
And I went to buy a bus card, and I didn't see anybody standing in line in front of the counter. So, you know, me, I just walk right up to the counter,
right.
And then a lady taps me on the shoulder and she points at the number. I'm like, oh, I had to pull a ticket. I had to pull a number first.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you only make that mistake once.
Yeah.
So
they have the we used to do at the deli.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. But they have it everywhere.
Pretty much everywhere.
Really?
Yes. So whenever I go into a store that I don't know, I look around first for that number ticker.
Right.
And then I know.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yep. There was one of my favorite ones. Well, you lived in Southern California. There was a deli called Bay City Deli in Santa Monica, and they make an amazing sandwich, and they call it the Godfather, no, the Godmother, Godmother.
Mm.
And anyway, a lot of people are waiting in line, so they have the queuing system, the old fashioned one.
Okay.
And so some guy was there and he was on his cell phone talking and he had like number 42 and he goes, yeah, 42. He goes, you're on the phone, get another number.
Oh, wow. All right.
It's like, yep, put your phone away before you get up to the counter.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice thing to do, right? It's a respectful thing to do.
I know. Everyone was like, wow. That was pretty cool.
Anyway,
let's get back to games. I like sidetracks. Let's get back to games. Okay, so... So now, I mean, you see this as something that's obviously really interesting to you at this point, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And what do you see? I mean, the thing that I think is fascinating about games, I hate to get into this, but is the fact that I don't think people realize how much money is in games compared to the movie industry.
Yes. But it's
astounding amount of creativity. And by far rivals the movie industry in terms of how much money it can bring in.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you just even think about it, because games can have so many different formats, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even if you just think about it, everybody has an iPhone. Everybody has a
sure.
Mobile
games is almost bigger. Yeah.
There are games on there. How many of us have mobile games on your
Tons.
Phone?
Yeah.
So just think about that versus how many people actually go to the movie theater.
Right.
So the number is infinite in that sense.
Well, I'm just going to give you an example. Everyone was going, is like, oh my God, you know, Avengers Endgame, you know, made $1 billion. It's like, you know how many video games made $1 billion? Way more, you know. And so the fact that it's such a rare thing, but it's because I think the movie industry is so in your face because of the way that it's in the news. Everyone thinks of the celebrities, everyone thinks of the thing, and they're all like following the movie industry so well. But video games are huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the other thing that's really interesting about video games is the new esports areas that are going on in video games.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It's really exciting. I mean, I really feel like actually it's almost like a new dawn for video games, right? Because it's becoming more and more known. And I think also the term gamer is starting to change even, you know, from the stereotype that we had in the past.
Yep.
You know, at this point, I would consider myself a gamer.
Right.
But I definitely, I mean, at least, you know, I don't look like a stereotypical gamer.
That's fine, yeah.
And I think that's changing, and I think that's really exciting.
Right. And I think that's another thing that I think is really fascinating about that world. There was a really interesting history of video games where it used to be that video games were actually very much marketed, when they first came out, very much marketed for boys or girls, right?
Yeah.
Right? And it was all about, like, video games are for boys or girls. And then suddenly toy stores came around and they decided to have a girl section and a boy section in the girl store, in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know where to place the video game. And it was kind of like a toss-up. And it ended up in the boy section. And the, then all of a sudden they started, it's like, well, boys like guns. And so all of a sudden video games became all about shooting things. And that was the biggest motivation why that video game world has gone in that direction and became very male-centric in a lot of ways. What do you think about that, video games? The fact that still people still think of video games in a very male-centric way. It's changing in a big way. But what are your thoughts on that process?
I do think it's changing. Yeah. And that's actually, you know, it's very exciting actually to be a girl
right.
nowadays, because things are changing on so many fronts.
Right.
You know, we at Ubisoft have multiple initiatives.
Right.
Like Pink Programming, for example, where we're encouraging women to get into programming even.
Right.
So I think the stereotype of games is changing drastically, because there's also different games available. You know, it's not every game is a shooter.
No.
You know, so I think the market is just broadening.
Yeah.
And it's, like I said, I think it's really exciting what things are changing at the moment, because we are getting to be, I feel, we're getting to be much more inclusive and much more open to audiences of any age group.
I think that's great. And I also want to say that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that girls can't play shooter games, because they can.
Oh, no, I'm a fantastic sniper. You have no idea. Yeah. No, I'm good.
But it's just, and there's a saying, is like that the diversity of the game may actually be really interesting as well, right? And
yes.
So there's different ways that people approach it.
Yes, and I, you know, and I'm happy to see that, you know, marketing departments around at every gaming studios are starting to realize that as well.
Right. Because, and it's an opportunity missed, right? Because that's 50% of the population that you could that you've missed out on if you just aim for boys.
And, you know, we are social beings, you know, like, you know, I started playing The Division and I pulled my boyfriend into it.
Right.
So you want to market to women because we want our friends to play with us.
Right. Of course. Of course. Now, that totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. I did a podcast with a woman named Kim Meltzer. And she is known as the esports mom. I don't know.
I think I've heard about her. Yeah.
So yes. she does a lot of what she did. She sort of got into it accidentally, but she became a person that organizes esports, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly there's, you know, Bobby, 14-year-old Bobby, who's in playing, you know, his Xbox in his room all day long, and he comes out. It's like, Mom, I just got invited to go to an esports thing tournament, because suddenly Bobby doesn't realize that he's the top 1% player in the world, and he doesn't know this, because he's just a really good player.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they call him up, it's like, do you want to participate in a tournament? So she goes around and has to reassure, it's like, no, this isn't, you know, child trafficking. No, I'm really going to take care of your son, and I'm going to be... So she sort of helps the moms understand what's going on, as or the moms or dads, and then sort of help when the kid is there, sort of be their mother or father to sort of like do that stuff. But that world is so big right now that I didn't know about this. She educated me about it. Is that there's now considering having scholarships from esports players and esports arenas.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know about that either. That's fascinating.
Right, and that is, you know, they're pretty much estimating that now a lot of people are investing heavily into that, because they think esports and video games will rival traditional sports.
I mean, they're incredibly entertaining to watch.
Yes.
Right?
They are.
You know, versus a sports game where sometimes, you know, you just look from left to right for the entire time.
Right, yes.
You know, we can create some amazing world on screen.
You can. And a lot of people, it's funny, because I think it's really interesting. It's like a lot of people's like, I don't understand why you would watch someone else play a video game. It's like, why are you watching someone else play basketball?
Yeah.
Right.
But I like watching other people play, because it's fun and it's entertaining.
And also they're better than me.
Yeah, so most of the time, yes.
And so you don't have to, you're not stuck with the frustration of not winning.
Yes. I remember I actually had to, because I am absolutely terrible when it comes to driving in games. That is my weakness. I cannot drive a car in a game.
In a game. Okay.
No, outside I can.
Yeah.
But inside, but in a game, I'm terrible at it.
Yeah.
So I actually, whenever it's a driving game, I actually have to watch somebody else play.
Right.
Because I don't ever make it that far.
I have a problem with jumping puzzles. If I have
really?
To yes, I can.
Okay.
Yeah, because I can't jump in time and turn at the same time.
Oh.
I can only like... jump and not turn, because I know it's really hard for me. Jumping puzzles are my weakness by a long shot. Like, oh.
But that's when it's good, when you have somebody you can watch.
Yes.
Because, you know,
Yeah.
Usually those games, you still want to see how they end.
I know. And then the other thing that's becoming very interesting in the gaming world is the world of Twitch and all of that stuff, right?
Yes. I have a couple of friends who are on Twitch.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And Discord and that, all of that is growing.
Right.
And it's like, it's a whole new community, like new communities are forming.
Right. And so what's really interesting about that is that that's becoming a big form of entertainment for a lot of people. And people, mm-hmm. they're not necessarily watching TV or going to the movies. They're no. watching Twitch and they're playing mm-hmm. games. And what's really cool is that what they're looking forward to now is they're not looking forward necessarily for the next Avengers film. They're looking forward to the next Division game, right?
Yes.
And so that becomes, and then it's like, okay, I can't wait to use my skills on this new thing. That puts a lot of pressure on you guys, doesn't it?
It does. We have a whole department for it.
Oh, really?
Yes, we actually have the Division. We have a Twitch channel.
Wow.
Hamish is one of our guys heading it off. Uh-huh. And they work so hard and they always create amazing content. So yeah, we definitely, we try to reach out to our community that way.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And that's how our community also communicates with us and they give us feedback. And it's a really, it's more of a two-way communication, which is really nice.
That's so cool. That's so cool. So when is your talk?
Tomorrow. Yes.
Okay.
I think right after lunch.
Right after lunch. Okay. Well, we are definitely looking forward to that and seeing that. And thanks so much for coming to Sofia, to Total Chaos, and thank you so much to Ubisoft for being a platinum sponsor, or one of our biggest sponsor for this event, which is really cool. And it's been awesome having you here and being able to talk about this fascinating world that you got involved in.
Thank you so much for having me.